coming from my own health struggles. I teach a very high plant, high protein, Mediterranean style ketogenic diet to overcome obesity and insulin resistance and avoid chronic disease long term.
Hei dere, velkommen til oss. Vi Biohacking Girls, din podcast for optimal helse.
Vi to jenter bak rattet. Dette Monica.
Og dette Alette. Vi biohacking-kollegaer og legger sammen våre erfaringer og kunnskap for å inspirere deg til å ta fatt på biohacking for å optimalisere helsen din.
Vi følger med og setter forstørrelsesglass på trender og siste forskning og snakker med verdens toppeksperter innen trening, life coaching, helse og biohacking.
Er du klar for å starte med konkrete hacks, lytte til din egen kropp og ta fatt på din helsemessige reise sammen med oss?
Vi ønsker naturlig tilnærming til helsen vår, og vi snakker til både menn og kvinner.
Du kan gjerne gi tilbakemeldinger til oss under podcasten her, og slå gjerne til med en god stjerne.
Du finner oss også på Instagram og Facebook. Er du klar? Velkommen!
I dag så skal vi snakke om et tema som vi lenge har hatt lyst til å gå litt i dybden på, for det er veldig mange som sliter med det, og det er dette som heter PCOS, polycystisk ovariesyndrom heter det på norsk. Og det er en veldig, egentlig den vanligste hormonforstyrrelsen som hos både jenter, damer og kvinner i dag.
Ja, det mellom 10-20% av oss kvinner som rammes av dette i disse dager, men jeg kjenner kun en person, jeg har en venn, venninne, som har denne, dette syndromet da. Så i min krets er det ikke mye. Kjenner du mange av dette som har PCOS?
Ja, faktisk. Så vet jeg om ganske så mange som sliter med det rundt i min krets, og har hatt problemer med å få barn og alt mulig rart.
Ja, for det akkurat det. Det kan få så enorme konsekvenser. Og det å slite med å få til å bli gravid er jo en av de, og vi har hørt noen historier fra jenter som ikke har de kuleste symptomene, som så bart og kviser som syster, og de går opp i vekt og de blir ustabile i humøret, og menstruasjonen er jo mange ganger helt borte, helt uteblivende, eller at den veldig uregelmessig, men dette også med at man mister hår og ansiktshår kan være et av de tegnene.
Og det jo sånn, når vi hører alle disse tegnene, så det veldig likt det å få diabetes. Så dette en annen form for diabetes, kanskje bare? Eller dette et forestadie? Det skal vi snakke om i dag, men jeg må bare fortelle en historie. Den jeg faktisk lest om en som hadde PCOS, og hun skriver da at hun skulle ønske visste litt mer om det før dette skjedde, for hun fikk sitt første kyss. Og så sier han, hun kysser, har du barbert deg?
Oi.
Hun hadde jo bart, og hun det verste hun har vært med på i hele sitt liv, og synes det var forferdelig. Så etter det begynte hun å vokse, og så skjønte hun at hun rett og slett hadde PCOS, og så var det hennes historie rundt det. Men så det kan jo, ja, jeg synes bare hun var litt søt.
Ja. Men du snakket om det med diabetes, og mange omtaler jo dette som en slags diabetes på livmoren, ikke sant?
Ja.
Og vi som biohackere, vi vil jo gjerne til roten av det som symptommessig og plagsomt, og prøve å forebygge så godt det lar seg gjøre.
Mm. For det som da, at det finnes jo ikke noen medisin mot PCOS. Det som blir foreskrevet hos legen er et hormonelt prevensjon. Det er det du får veldig ofte hjelp til når du kommer hos legen. Men så det jo dette vi skal snakke om i dag, jo at du kan faktisk gjøre noe med kanskje kosthold, livsstil, og at det også kan hjelpe. Men vi skal også snakke om obesogener, og hvordan disse kan føre til overvekt og forstyrre våre geners uttrykk.
Ja, dette synes jeg litt skummelt område. Det så lite håndfast og målbart, og da øker alltid usikkerheten hos meg, og sikkert hos deg også, Alette.
Ja, jeg tror det gjør det hos de fleste. Men følg med for Tempo, som vi skal ha på podcasten i dag. Hun har et eller annet å si om både PCOS og obesogener. Hun en amerikansk dame som vi begynte å følge på Instagram når vi ble veldig inn i keto på den tiden, for hun heter The Ketogenic Nutritionist på Instagram. Og hun har selv en historie med PCOS, og den skal vi vel få snakket om I dag. Og så har hun også blitt veldig interessert I dette med obesogener, for hun ser faktisk så mange, som hun sier, gjør alt riktig, men allikevel så blir de tykkere og tykkere.
Ja, denne damen heter Temple Stewart, og hun ernæringsfysiolog og sertifisert personlig trener, og jobber som spesialist med pasienter og folk som kommer til henne, fordi at legen har på en måte gitt opp, eller bare gitt I medisiner, og da går hun under I dybden og begynner å ta tester og finner ofte årsaken, og hun har hjulpet så mange kvinner. Denne episoden veldig interessant og optimistisk for det så mye håp I den forteller og deler med alle de kvinnene som da har strevet med å kunne bli gravide, som etter hennes 3 måneders opplegg har klart å bli gravide.
I dag så har hun flyttet med familien sin til Phoenix I Arizona, fordi jeg tror hun har blitt veldig inspirert av alle historiene hun har hørt, og nå hun faktisk I gang med et medisinstudie, så dette blir spennende. Hun kommer til å være en ressurs når dette blir ferdig, det helt sikker på. Så nå vil vi ønske Temple velkommen til podcasten vår.
Velkommen til Biohacking Girls, din podcast for optimal helse.
Welcome, Temple. So nice of you to get up in the morning this early to talk to us. And we know that you really like your morning routine. So today it's going to be mixed up for you. But please, can you just share what a normal morning is for you and how this has made you stay your weight loss, how you keep that off with your morning routine?
Yeah, totally. So my morning routine has kind of changed over the years because I've kind of gone in stages. You know, I was a Division I college athlete for a long time, and then now I've got a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. So things have shifted, and I think that's really important for people to understand is that you don't have to get so stuck in it. If it's not working for your lifestyle anymore, switch it up. Make it still meet your health goals, but don't be afraid to change things. So, you know, my normal morning routine, we get up really early. My husband and I are just early birds. We also go to bed really early, so that's how we're able to do that. We have a great nighttime routine as well. But usually I get up around either 4:30 or 5. I do somewhat of a kind of like wake up, perk up. I'll usually have some water with lemon or something to kind of get me going that's not coffee straight away. I've switched to mushroom coffee just to try some experiments with avoiding a lot of caffeine. And so I'll do that. And then I typically do like a 30 to 45 minute strength or like functional fitness, strength Pilates, something along those lines, because it's still dark here in Phoenix. So I don't really like to go for a walk or run by myself. So I'll do that. And then I spend a lot of my morning in prayer and gratitude. So I'm a non-denominational Christian. So that's it. That's what I will go to next. And that really helps me start my day off. And then I'll do breakfast. And I think it's really important to note, I really aim for at least the 30 to 35 gram protein breakfast in the morning. And I feel like that has been best to help me like kick cravings and just manage my appetite throughout the day. And then that's usually when I'll have like a second cup of tea or, you know, mushroom coffee. And then that's also the time that my kids start to wake up. So you know how it is. It just kind of depends what happens once my kids wake up. But that's really my kind of sacred time in the mornings to really start my day off well. And what I did for this podcast is I just shifted that same routine just an hour earlier. So I got up at 4, you know, and went ahead and did it.
You stick to your routine. But how, so you spend like half an hour, 45 minutes every morning doing this?
Yeah, I would say probably closer to an hour and 15 on a good day. It depends on how slow I am, to be honest, how many distractions there are. But yeah, I would say, you know, an hour 15 is usually my goal.
So sticking to routines and even incorporating some kind of foods and nutrition in the morning is really, for the overall health. But we would really love to hear you share about your weight loss story, Temple.
Yeah, totally. So as I mentioned in the beginning, my story really, like where I am now really was influenced by where I was. And so I grew up in the South Mississippi. So just to kind of explain to your audience, the South is very known in the United States for very rich food. There are incredible cooks here. My family, it's just a history of deep fried sugar, fatty foods. And so that's how I grew up. And I grew up eating a lot of those foods. And I never really thought anything was wrong. But I was a bigger kid. So I was definitely, you know, larger than all my friends and all my peers in school. And, you know, that set off some self-esteem issues as a child, but I was very athletic. So I played soccer, softball, basketball, I ran track, I did all the things, which I think masked a lot of the potential problems I would have had as a child. So I wasn't obese, but I was definitely pushing it. And so in college is when I really noticed things were getting off. You know, at that time I was old enough to have a regular period and I wasn't having a regular period. And like I mentioned earlier, I was playing soccer competitively in college and, you know, I was having mood issues. I was getting this cystic acne. I was shedding a lot of hair. And for an 18, 19 year old, you know, this isn't right. I should be in my prime, you know, in terms of hormonal health. And so I went to the nurse practitioner there on campus and I was telling her, I was like, I'm skipping my period. Sometimes I'll go 3 or 4 months without a period. I'm getting these horrific, like my skin was just terrible. And, you know, the solution given to me and the solution given to a lot of women was birth control. And so, you know, not knowing any better, I did it. Which of course just made everything masked and likely made things worse long term. And so anyway, I went through college playing soccer and still continually gaining weight, but kind of athletic and lifting weights. So I was managing. And when I got out of college and I was studying to be a dietitian at the time, I loved food and I knew that food impacted the way I feel. I just didn't have the tools at the time to really overhaul my diet. So I was doing a lot of what the American colleges say are as a healthy diet. So I was doing a lot of whole grains, a lot of legumes, a lot of these high carby foods. What I didn't realize at the time was that I was extremely insulin resistant. So this was just making me more and more in trouble with my weight and skin and everything. And anyway, I graduated college and I went to work for a hospital here in Florida, or there in Florida at the time. And that's when things really hit the fan. I was no longer competitively playing soccer. So my activity levels went really, really down and I started to just balloon. I mean, I was gaining a pound a day. And before I knew it, I was like 65 pounds overweight. And, you know, I'd just gotten married and I wanted to be a mom and all these things. And I was just thinking in my head, one, I feel like an imposter because I'm a dietitian and I can't even get my life together in terms of my weight. Two, I'm not having a period and I know that that can't be helpful. We know our fertility and our cycles are just so important to women's health. Three, I'm getting home at like 3 p.m. in the afternoon, 4 p.m. and I just want to sleep. Like I have no time for my husband. I have no time to do things fun because I just felt horrific. And so I couldn't figure out why. And of course, ended up at the OBGYN and the women's doctor. And they basically told me, oh, you have PCOS. You've had this for years. Like here's metformin, spironolactone, and some more birth control. And so, you know, that was really kind of the crux of my story, was getting that and listening to this kind of prude doctor who was just, he had terrible bedside manner and he was just very rude about the whole thing. And I was basically begging for information on how to heal this naturally and I got nothing. So I walked out of there feeling super defeated. You know, I already had mood issues and that just added to it. And so that was really the day that I was like, you know what? Like I refuse to live in this any longer. This has been years of my life now and I'm going to fix this. And I don't care if I have to go a little rogue to do it.
Wow. What a story. Yeah. So we have so many questions about PCOS for our audience, but please just explain to us what it is and why is so many women affected by this now?
Yeah. So it's the number one endocrine infertility causing hormonal issue in the world. It's a huge problem. A lot of women have no clue that they have it. And a lot of women will go years and years and years without ever knowing that they are struggling with this. And essentially, to put it super simply, PCOS is diabetes of the ovaries. So it's an insulin resistant condition for the most part. Sometimes there can be like, you know, different versions of PCOS, like inflammatory PCOS or birth control induced PCOS and things like that. But the vast majority, like 85%+ of people who have PCOS have some degree of insulin resistance. And so it is a predecessor before type 2 diabetes, essentially. Now, I do think there's genetic components. I think it depends on environment. And we're learning more and more about all these things in our environment that may be pushing insulin resistance. But I say all that to say it truly is a form of diabetes of the ovaries. And so that is PCOS in a nutshell. Essentially, it just causes a lot of crazy hormonal dysfunction from insulin is like upstream and it causes kind of a contaminated river downstream for all these other hormones. And so that's when you start to see all these hormonal problems in women, you'll get facial hair, which is horrific. And then the women will start to lose hair on their head. You know, you'll get these cystic acne. You'll definitely most of the time lose a period and or have a period, but not ovulate, which is a common thing I see as well. Women with PCOS really struggle with weight loss. We can go super low calorie. You can do all these things. And it just is so stubborn because insulin is the energy moving hormone, and it will keep fat storage on you if you don't take care of it. And so that's essentially insulin or PCOS in a nutshell. And it's very debilitating in a lot of ways. It's linked to binge eating. It's linked to mood disorders. It's linked to depression. It's linked to all these things. Long-term women with PCOS, if they do get pregnant, they tend to have way higher rates of gestational diabetes, preeclampsia, and around 40% of women diagnosed with PCOS will eventually, no, 60% will eventually end up with type 2 diabetes. And so it's truly a problem that we are just kind of ignoring and brushing under the rug. And then also conventional medicine tends to just treat it by masking the symptoms.
Yeah, because the conventional treatment is birth control pills, isn't it? Because
of it's birth control. It's typically metformin, which is a type 2 diabetes medication. Yeah. And then there's a medication called spironolactone, which is an anti-androgen medication. So it doesn't actually fix the reason that you have high androgens. It just gets rid of those high androgens. So a lot of people do feel good on spironolactone. And I'm not totally against it, especially if they're developing a lot of quick problems. I think it can be helpful, but ultimately we've got to fix the root cause if we want to have this individual to ovulate again, if we want to have them having a regular cycle, and ultimately we want to stop this high androgen problem long-term.
So how long time do you think you have been carrying on with this syndrome without knowing?
Oh, I definitely think I developed it in adolescence. So I would probably, I would say around puberty is when I really started to struggle. Like I was a pretty normal, like regular size, thin kid with no real issues. I think around puberty is when I started to, I really never had a regular cycle until into my 20s. Like around puberty, I remember I started a cycle and then it just went away for like 6 months. And then I remember I'd have kind of one where it would be light. So I'd probably say anywhere from, I don't know, 13 to 15.
So, but how did you find out? Or what did she test? What hormones? Yeah.
So they ran a whole, the OBGYN ran a whole women's reproductive panel. So that includes like total testosterone, free testosterone, DHEAS, all these androgenic hormones. He also ran just a regular like CBC, CMP, looking at glucose and my A1C and all those different things. And then ultimately to get the PCOS diagnosis,
yes.
Have you talked about that before? Do you want me to explain?
No, explain it, please.
Yeah. Here in the States, it's based off the Rotterdam criteria. And basically you have to have two of the three symptoms. One is some sort of amenorrhea or skipping cycles, abnormal cycles, et cetera. Two is having high androgens, like we talked about, like that high DHEA or high testosterone. And then the third one is actual cysts on your ovaries. Now, there's a lot of problems with this criteria, and I talk about this a lot on socials and the internet, is I fully believe PCOS can be reversed because it's diagnosed off of symptoms, right? And a lot of women have cysts on their ovaries. We just have more because we're not ovulating. And so when you fix all of these symptoms, you can not be diagnosable with PCOS ever again. And it's totally possible. And I've seen it in, you know, hundreds of clients, but you know, conventional medicine tells you that you're stuck with this for life. And so and I think even just the way we think is such a powerful modality in our healing. And so being told that you're never going to reverse this, you're always going to have these problems, I think is a part of the problem that I have with conventional medicine. So that's essentially the diagnostic criteria for this is no period, weird hormones, insist on your ovaries. And so, but all of this can be reversed.
So why do you think we see a rise in women today with PCOS?
Yes, I think there's a lot of things. Number one, by a long shot, is just the way that I shouldn't even say Western societies, because all societies now are eating this way. High starch, high sugar, a lot of times high fat in combination with this high starch and sugar, and limited protein, limited lean muscle mass, limited movement. I also think there's a genetic component. So my children are six times more likely to have PCOS if they were born when I was in an unhealthy place. So I don't really believe that of my biological children, because I was very healthy when I had them or had her. And so, you know, there's a genetic component, and then there's the environment, right? We are just now scratching the surface of the things that we're being exposed to. We have very poor food laws here in the United States. We have very poor beauty and cosmetic and makeup laws. So there's just all kinds of trash that's put into these products that we're, women especially, are rubbing on their skin, you know, 10 times a day. And it's full of these phthalates and, you know, PUFAs and forever chemicals and all these things that are just not hormonally conducive to health. And so I think it's a combination of all these things. You know, I live in Phoenix in the United States, which is one of the worst air quality cities in the nation. And we know that air quality impacts insulin resistance. We know that drinking tap water, depending on what's inside of it, can impact some of these hormones. And so I think by far, number one is diet. Number two would definitely be the loss of just physical activity and movement throughout the day. But I think there's this missing component of what are we being exposed to and how is it affecting us long term?
So if you have the syndrome, what should you absolutely avoid of food?
Oh, immediately get rid of high glycemic food. So I immediately quit flour and sugar and any, I even backed away from the fruits that would spike blood sugar quickly just because I was not in a place that I could handle a lot of carbohydrates at the time. And I don't necessarily believe carbs are the devil, but I do believe that when you overuse them or you're in a compromised situation where I was in women with PCOSR, people with prediabetes, high blood pressure, high triglycerides, they're all compromised to some degree. You're not processing carbs the way you should be. And so it was for a therapeutic time that I decided to get rid of all of it. And so I basically focused heavily on animal protein and lots of non-starchy vegetables and a lot of omega-3 fatty acids. So I lived in the coast at the time in Florida. So I was doing a lot of high quality seafood and things of that nature where I was getting a lot of omega-3s, but absolutely kick sugar, get rid of, I don't believe alcohol is really good for anything. Get rid of alcohol, get rid of starch and all those things that just aren't going to take you to your goals.
And how about starches like in potatoes, cold potatoes, or would that be okay?
I think so, depending on the individual. So I, when I counsel clients with PCOS, I always check a C-peptide and a fasting insulin. C-peptide tells me how good your pancreas is still functioning. Fasting insulin tells me where's your insulin right now in this moment. And then I also look at a little bit of inflammation. If my individual or my client is really struggling and their C-peptide is very high and their insulin is very high, I'll probably still skip cold potatoes and rice and things that, you know, maybe somebody in a little bit of a healthier place can do just for a time, especially if that individual's goal is conception or like, you know, they really motivated by quick changes. But I don't think that that needs to necessarily be eliminated forever. You know, now I eat plenty of fruit. I eat starchy vegetables with no problem. And my insulin is like 3. And so my C-peptide's 1.2 or something like that. And so go ahead.
Yeah. No, so I'm just so curious about what you eat because you are, of course, inspired by the ketogenic lifestyle, but also the Mediterranean food. So What would typically be on a good plate for you, which makes you thrive?
Yeah. So first, I do a lot of cycling. So I typically stay pretty keto on the week of my like bleed week or my menstrual cycle. And depending on what I'm doing, right? So I'm in med school right now. So I spend a lot of my days pretty sedentary. And so on those days, I'm not doing a lot of carbohydrates solely because I'm not needing the glycogen and not the sugar. And so a normal day of ketogenic eating for me, I definitely always have eggs. I'm a big egg girl. I don't have any sensitivities or allergies to eggs. So I love eggs and I typically do a lot of fermented food. So I'll have 3 eggs in the morning, 3 or 4 eggs, and then I'll do like a load of sauerkraut or maybe a handful of kimchi. I also like to do fermented coconut yogurt as well. I typically don't snack much just because I found that that keeps me pretty hungry throughout the day. I just find myself always snacking if I start. So then lunch will usually be some sort of protein, whether it's chicken, steak, a piece of fish. Sometimes I'll do a protein shake if I'm like on the go, but I do a beef collagen protein that I find very helpful. And then I'll do a lot of veggies. So it often looks like some sort of bowl, like a stir fry bowl or a large salad. Or sometimes it's honestly just a piece of protein on the go because I'm running out of the house. And then lunch is my largest meal, by the way. So I typically do a very large lunch and then dinner, I eat way less. Just, I have found that it works better for my sleep. But I do like to sit down and have dinner with my kids. And so it's kind of the same thing. It may be a piece of salmon and roasted vegetables or air fried broccoli or something like that. I cook using butter, animal fats, and usually a very high quality olive oil and coconut oil as well. And so those are my fat. I don't do a lot of dairy. If I do dairy, I'll do raw dairy. That's pretty easy to get here. I just found that dairy is easier for me to digest when it's in the raw form. But yeah, that's a pretty normal day for me. And then, you know, if I'm having like a high strength workout day, or I'm very active, or we're going on like a 6 mile hike, I'll do some of the things you mentioned. I'll do some maybe cold sweet potatoes, or, you know, sometimes I avoid grains in general, cause I've got some autoimmune stuff underlying my PCOS, but I like to do some fruits after protein and on the go. So yeah, that's kind of what a different schedule would look like.
Sounds amazing.
It sounds really intuitive and really amazing. Yes. But I want to know about your clients. I guess they come to you because they want to get pregnant and they can't. And then they find out that they have PCOS, because that's usually when they find out. And do you see that they get pregnant when they fix this syndrome?
100%. I shouldn't say 100%, but yes, very frequently. I mean, I've had over 50 plus clients get pregnant on my like 3 month, my program's 3 months. So to be able to get pregnant that quick after being told for however long that you're never going to be pregnant is very cool. And it happened the same for me. Like I was shocked, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, like I didn't expect this to heal so quickly. So yes. And the good thing about your body is I fully believe in the body's innate ability to heal. And I think when we set it up for healing, it just magnifies it. And the body knows what's right. The body wants your hormones to be regulated. It doesn't want you to be in this overweight state. It doesn't want you to be inflamed. It's doing the best it can given the environment that it's been put in. And so, yes, many, many clients get pregnant. Some of my favorite stories are the ones who have gone through multiple rounds of IUIs or multiple rounds of IVF and all these things, and they've spent 30 plus grand. I had a client that spent over 50 grand on IVF and got pregnant using a ketogenic diet. And so, you know, I don't guarantee anything because that's just out of my complete control, but I do tell people we can set you up for the best success possible. We jokingly call the ketogenic diet, kind of in the keto realm, the baby diet. Carnivore to some degree as well, in a lot of ways, depending on that individual. But yeah, it can happen. And I always tell my clients, you know, a huge piece of the puzzle is hope as well, and understanding that your body wants to be in a good spot. And I think a lot of people get so lost in conventional medicine that they have just a part of their problem and a part of their unhealth is just the sheer fact that they've lost hope and that they've been told that you're going to live with this forever. You've got this condition that will never go away. And there's something extremely defeating in that. And I try to switch that narrative as much as I can for my clients. It's like, no, you hold on to hope. You do not give up because it will come, you know? And so, yeah, it's really incredible. And I would argue that it's one of my favorite parts of the job, because infertility is such a, I think it affects women so much. And I think it affects women more than they can even imagine. And so watching them be able to have a baby is just, it's a real treat.
Beautiful. And yeah, it's the identifying with your disease is really, really not healthy. It's going to backfire. You have to have the hope, that's for sure. And do you put everyone on the ketogenic diet in the beginning, like a strict version of it?
Yes and no. So yes, I'm very big on meeting the individual's body where it is. And so sometimes I'll get clients who think that they have insulin resistance or think that it's X, Y, and Z, but I find out through lab work and through testing and through symptom, you know, recall that, oh, maybe this is, we're dealing with something different, like a cortisol issue, or maybe you've been exposed to heavy metals or something where it's like, maybe we need to take a different approach, because there are drawbacks to keto. And so I don't ever want to put someone in a place where it's going to make them feel worse and, or we're not going to get the results we want. I would say the vast majority of the people that come to me have correctly identified insulin resistance and a problem with like obesity or something like that. And so, yes, but if I get lab work back that changes my mindset, I tell this, and I know because my social media is the ketogenic nutritionist, a lot of people assume that I put everyone in the same cookie cutter diet, and that's not true. I don't. I am not dogmatic. I try not to be that way with nutrition either. And there are some clients that I'll start off on a more moderate carbohydrate diet because I'm more worried about their cortisol or their thyroid, or there's something else brewing that it's just not a great idea, and I think it would make them feel worse. I also get a lot of clients with very complex medical stuff going on. So I've had clients with, you know, type 2 diabetes and higher stage kidney failure. And those are sometimes just not super safe to immediately go keto. And so I really try to do it based on the individual. But I would say overall, most people find me because they know, okay, this is an insulin issue. I'm pre-diabetic. I've got high blood pressure. I've got PCOS, all these things that have led them to me. And so The majority do, but there are those zebra cases that are not appropriate for keto.
Vi bryter inn her nå for å fortelle dere om et nytt samarbeid vi så glad for å endelig dele. Vi blitt stolte ambassadører av The Solution fra Oslo Skin Lab. Og vi liker denne trenden med å ta vare på huden fra innsiden. Det føles så riktig å støtte huden med riktig mat og gode supplementer.
Det noe vi som bioekker har holdt på med I mange år, så det å supplere med kollagenpulver. Samarbeidet kunne ikke passet oss bedre. The Solution et beauty-kollagen som kan vise til studier på at dette pulveret det hjelper på. Bare hør her da. Mindre rynkedybde, glattere hud med færre linjer, mer elastitet og spenst I huden, og mindre grad av cellulitter.
Oh la la, nå har vi jo brukt dette en stund og fått snakket med forskeren bak det, og vi rimelig spent på resultater. Fordi utgangspunktet vårt var strålende bra, og det håpet vi på siden vi biohackere. Vi har tatt en hudanalyse I forkant, men vi må nok vente litt på neste hudanalyse for å se hva som har skjedd med huden vår. Kollagen en komponent I hudens bindevev og viktig for at huden skal holde seg glatt og spenstig. Men fra allerede slutten av 20-årene så synker disse nivåene av kollagen I huden vår, og dette vil vi jo gjerne hacke.
Ja, for det som ofte glemmes I debatten om kollagen hvordan kollagenet fremstilt og lengden på peptidene. Et hvilken som helst kollagen vil ikke hjelpe. Det hjelper ikke å spise proteinrik mat, selv om det inneholder mye kollagen. Protein I kosten fører ikke til glattere hud.
Effekten på hud vitenskapelig studert, og effektiviteten kun blitt påvist I studier der man har testet hydrolysert kollagen, altså kollagen som brutt ned til en helt bestemt peptidlengde. Hydrolysering ser derfor ut til å være nødvendig for å få effekt på hudens glatthet.
Derfor var det avgjørende for oss å finne et kollagentilskudd som tilfredsstiller disse kriteriene, og som har gjennomgått grundig tester. The Solution fra Oslo Skin Lab oppfyller alle disse standardene.
Kollagenpeptidene I The Solution spesialdesignet for å ligne hudens eget kollagen. Pulver har nøytral smak, og det ingen tilsetningsstoffer eller registrerte bivirkninger.
Og for et enkelt produkt å ta. Sånn skal det gjøres. En pose om dagen, som du kan blande I hva du vil. Vår favoritt å helle det I morgenkaffen. En pose en fiks ferdig dagsdose på 2,5 gram, og dette samme mengde som blitt brukt I alle studiene.
Og ikke bare det, men den superlett å åpne. Du nysgjerrig og har lyst til å prøve dette, så har vi et megatilbud til deg med rabattkoden BIOHACKING60. Da får du 60% avslag på den første måneden og 30% etter det. Så gå inn på osloskinlab.no.
Temple, tell us, how do you spot insulin resistance like in a mile away?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I posted a reel about that the other day.
We have to hear you talk about it.
Yeah, it's so, once you've had it, I think you're just acutely aware of like, oh man, that person's struggling. You know, at my worst, I was able to see all these symptoms in myself. And so I can see it in the public. And it's not coming from I'm judging this person. It's coming from my heart's breaking because I want to help. Type of thing. And so some of the just immediate physical symptoms that you'll see with people, anytime there is chin hair or facial hair on a female, aside from sometimes menopausal cases, but even then that's a red flag for me. Anytime I see any type of balding or hair loss on a female, that's a red flag for me. There's something called acanthosis nigricans, which is this darkening of the skin where patches are. And you'll see, in all ethnicities, you'll see this and you can spot that as well. Oftentimes just the way an individual is shaped in terms of holding on to most of their weight in their belly, that can be another indicator of insulin or a cortisol issue as well. I can spot it in about 2 seconds in lab values. So high triglycerides, we know in the States, we let them go all the way to 180 or 150. We really know that they really should stay under 89 for lowest risk of disease. Low HDL is another one. Anybody with high blood pressure is setting off alarms for me. Anybody with a high glucose, like over 85, is really more than optimal. Anybody with a fasting insulin over 5 is a red flag for me. And so some of those physical symptoms, skin tags are another really common one. Skin tags, cystic acne. Anytime you see just people that their face is almost like a moon face or puffy, that can be a cortisol insulin issue as well. And so Those are some of the immediate physical signs that I will look for in an individual. And oftentimes they'll tell me, you know, if I get a client on a discovery call, they're like, I've got X, Y, and Z. It's like, okay, well, we don't really even need lab work, although we're going to get it because we know that that's kind of the hormonal consequences of insulin resistance.
Can we blame the modern food environment for this problem?
Yeah, I think so. I think a large part of the blame goes to it. I think a large part of the blame goes to the way that we have put convenience over quality in a lot of ways with food. I also think, and I'm trying to tread on this one lightly, I think even the way that we've started to feed infants, and I'm certainly not saying that everyone can breastfeed or that you should feel guilty if you've had to formula feed, but I even think from birth, I think some children are set up for failure with this because of the quality of formula and things like that. So I think it can even start as early as a newborn. But yes, the conventional food products and the fast food and the high fat, high sugar, all of that stuff is just a recipe for chronic disease. And it's not just PCOS, it's all of them. It's type 2 diabetes, it's obesity, it's everything, you know?
And chemical pollution in the environment is also like a supersizing the global obesity epidemic. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. And this is like something I've kind of jumped on the bandwagon recently, not recently, within the last couple of years, because as a health provider, you see people all over the spectrum when they come to you for health. And sometimes people are literally doing everything right. They're doing everything right with their diet. They're doing their insulin or their resistance training. They're making sure they're sleeping. They're wearing their blue light blockers. Like you guys, they're just doing everything correct. And you're still just stuck with them. And you're like, I cannot figure out what's going on with you. And so I got really frustrated with this because I want to be able to help everyone to some degree. And yes, there could be stress or something else that's causing this. But when you start to look at the things we're exposed to, particularly in our water and our air first, even all the way down to our cooking utensils and what we're drinking from. And here in the States, one of the things that's not regulated is in most fast food containers or food products to go, you're getting a lining of forever chemicals leaching into your food. So I think that that's probably one of the reasons colon cancer is spiking and all these other things that we're seeing. So I think we're truly being attacked from all sides. And I say that in a way that like, I don't want people to panic that are listening to this or just freak out and stress about it because that's only going to make the situation worse. But you do need to be mindful and you do need to be aware that you shouldn't be drinking tap water. And I don't know how it is for you guys, but certainly not here in the States. It's not good. The air is not good. The air quality is not good. And so I address those two things first. And then the third thing is, what are you rubbing all over your body first thing in the morning, right when you get out of the shower, all the way down to what are you brushing your teeth with? And so those things can oftentimes be just the icing on the cake when it comes to people's hormonal health. And so I really encourage people to start looking at those things, especially if you're stuck and you're like, I feel like I'm doing everything right, but there's just something missing. You know, it can get overwhelming because you start to get really deep into this hole of like, oh my gosh, there's chemicals in my mattress and I'm sleeping on these pillows all night that are breathing these PFAs, you know, all these things and phthalates and plastics. It's just getting to the point where it's like, this is ridiculous. We need some help from our government to some degree and regulations because it's just out of control and there's no way you can fix all of it until they start making regulations at the top. And that was a long-winded way of saying like, I don't want people to panic about this, but it is a problem. And I'm very, very conscious of this. And I recently got an organic acids test, which is a test of urine. And it basically looks at a lot of this stuff and a couple of my levels. And I've been doing this for years, cleaning up products. I have air doctors all over my home. We drink out of reverse osmosis with added minerals and we do a lot of things. And I still, several of my levels were extremely high and that's concerning to me. You know, I live on a golf course. We have a large major road that I'm looking out right out of my window. And so all of these things can add up long term. And so if you're struggling and you're not really sure where to go and you've addressed all these other things, that might be your next step.
Yeah, it's really hard to see because it's hard to grasp because you can't see this. You have to take like the test you do. And what can we do that's kind of easy for us in our everyday life? Because I kind of panic when I think about this.
Yeah, me too.
It's so hard.
Yeah.
So what's some easy first steps just to like get the base down?
Totally. Yeah. And again, I want to overemphasize, nobody panic that's listening to this, because it can get, we've all done it for some degree of like, we're really stressing out. Like, what are our kids doing anyway? So the first things that I like to address is water and air. What are you breathing? You spend most of your time inside of your home when you're sleeping and you count indoor air, all of that. So those are the first things I like to address with my clients. Are you drinking tap water that has who knows what in it? And are you breathing air that you can't see? Because those are the quickest ways into our systems, right? That's the quickest way into our bloodstream, the quickest way into our body. And so fix those two things first. And so that's usually save up. You know, you may not be able to put a reverse osmosis on your whole home, but you can get one for the countertop, you know, and do those types of things. And then there's air filters. There's so many companies now that are waking up to this. And so that would be kind of the first steps. And then I tell people, change your cooking ware. That is, you're also ingesting things there. So you don't need to be cooking with scratch Teflon or plastic. Switch to stainless steel. There's several brands that, you know, here in the States, we have one called Caraway and Allpan. So there's several different ones that you can use. But good old stainless steel and cast iron can be your first step. And then switch out the things you're using. Like, are you flipping your eggs with a plastic spatula? You know, get a wooden one, get a metal one, get something different. So start there. I like to have people switch to glass water bottles pretty soon. Stop drinking out of these like cheapo plastic water bottles that you can bend and that get heated up and leach plastic into your water. Metal, glass, anything like that. And then like, look at what you're putting on yourself. You know, there's so much trash in our beauty products. And this is especially bad here in the States. The European countries are way better in a lot of ways. But even so, fragrances and all these plastics and, you know, all this crazy stuff. Get an app. Here in the States, we have one called Yuka. And there's another one called Think Dirty. I don't know if you guys have some good ideas for where you are. But start scanning your products. Are you rubbing, you know, aluminum deodorant on your armpits that's right next to your lymph system and will absorb everything rapidly? Are you spraying perfume that's going to get absorbed into your skin? We have to understand your skin is your largest organ. And so whatever you're putting on your skin can get direct access to your bloodstream pretty quickly. And so what makeup are you using? Are you using skincare at night that you're rubbing all over your face and then you're sleeping with this, you know, this layer of junky ingredients? And so those are my like top three for sure.
So we don't even know how many products we put on our face in the morning. If you put on makeup, it ends up being like 20 or 30 or 40. So easy. It's really easy. Yeah. With all these, you know, yeah. We do whatever to look nice.
I know.
And we also have to look out for the children because they are even more
exposed,
yeah, and fragile than we are. How do you do that with your children?
Yeah, and this became very personal for me because my biological daughter was born with a congenital defect that nobody had the answer for, and so it really, really scared me. And at the time, I was conscientious of this stuff, but this was about 3 years ago before I really had a huge idea of what was going on. Your first child will always get the body burden because your body, that's one way of getting rid of a lot of the toxins is through breast milk. It's one of the excretion methods. It's kind of gross, but it's true. And then so your first child takes on most of the toxins that you've been exposed to. And so one thing I'd really recommend for people that are thinking about having a child, or maybe it's your first child or even a second or third, really spend a lot of time working on this before you get pregnant, because your baby will be exposed to that stuff. And so it's kind of the same stuff. Like I think breastfeeding is the one of the first things you can do to help really set your baby off on a good start. But look what you're rubbing on them. Are you bathing them in soap that's washing off their skin microbiome every day? Are you putting these scented, you know, lotions and products and all these things on you? Are you putting things on yourself? And then when you hold your baby, it's rubbing off on your baby. You have to understand they're smaller and then they have lesser detox methods and they have a lot of absorption. They're able to absorb a lot. And so all of those things are really, really important. A couple of things that I prioritize with my child is I bought organic, you know, non-tox bedding. I made sure that the bassinet that we use and the crib mattress and things like that were non-tox. And then I also made sure all of our bedding was non-tox because our infant ended up sleeping with us a little bit. And so I didn't want her exposed to any of that stuff as well. And then looking at some of the foods you start them on, right? So sometimes we're exposed through toxins through our food. And so if you're not buying, I prioritize buying organic, especially if it's going in my you know, 6-month-old's mouth. And so those are some ways that you can do it too. I like to buy dairy, either raw and organic is my preference. Same thing with meat. Are we getting high quality? And I know this is not always feasible for some. It may not be in the budget or whatever. Just do the best you can. Start where you can start. But those would be my suggestions. And then, you know, even down to like, am I bathing my child in reverse osmosis water that's from my house, or am I bathing them with the tap water that I know that they're going to absorb? So, you know, things to think about for sure.
Very good. We will absolutely think about this. Yeah. But we call these chemicals obesogens. Mm-hmm. How do they affect us so that they make us fat?
Yeah, yeah.
What happens to our hormones?
Yeah, it's obesogenic, and there's so many. I mean, we could do a 5-hour podcast on all the different labels and chemicals, but essentially they're all hormonal. So they work in all hormonal mechanistic ways. So either they reduce insulin, or they increase insulin, so you're having this insulin resistant effects. A lot of these hormones will act or be recognized as the body as different hormones. I mean, a lot of these chemicals. So like we call them xenoestrogens. So they're these fragrances and products, and then our body doesn't understand what they are and it thinks it's estrogen. So a lot of times you'll see this with people that have very high estrogen to progesterone ratios. That can be a good indicator that someone's body burden is getting really high, but it's all hormonal. They'll build up. A lot of these chemicals too can mess with leptin and ghrelin. So leptin and ghrelin are your hunger and satiation hormones. And so sometimes people that are exposed to a lot of these toxic chemicals really have a hard time managing their intake, their food intake. They're just constantly craving. They're constantly hungry. They're constantly struggling with a lot of that. So most of it is hormonal. We know estrogen dominance, which is kind of what I explained when the body recognizes chemicals as estrogen, has direct links with fibroids and endometriosis and breast cancer and all these different things. And so it's mostly hormonal. And then you'll have some direct toxic effects, like some heavy metals and things like that will have some direct like toxicants to organs and things like that. But it really comes down to a lot of these things just really, really mess with your hormones or mimic hormones. And so your body doesn't know which is real and which is a chemical.
But how about fructose? Why is this a driver of weight gain as an obesogen?
Yeah. So fructose and high fructose corn syrup came out like, I don't know how many years ago, but it has been a massive, massive health burden. And it's what they use in soda. It's what they use in a lot of these processed desserts and candies and things like that. There is some degree of fructose in healthy foods like agave nectar and things like that. But it really drives fat storage in the liver. And so you'll see a lot of people that are struggling with this or not digesting or not in a healthy metabolic place with fructose or high fructose corn syrup get fatty liver. And it's called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And we're seeing it in children. I've had a client with a child that was as young as 3 with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease.
No.
And so, yeah, it's horrible. And because, and once you've kind of, I don't want to say done that to yourself, because it's not always the child's fault, obviously, but that's scary for the long-term health of that individual. Are they going to be compromised long-term? Maybe, possibly, you know? And so those are some of the scary things. And it's cheap. So it's very cheap to produce. It's very cheap and easy. It's also very addictive. So it sets off a lot of those dopamine rewards in the brain. And so it tastes good. It feels good in a lot of ways. And so that's what keeps people coming back for more. And it, for me, it's like, why have we not had strong legislation against this? As soon as we knew that we've known for years that it is extremely problematic. And I'm talking mostly about high fructose corn syrup, because like I said, fruits and some other things contain fructose, but if you're in an insulin resistant state, that can be a problem.
But how about all the artificial sweeteners? Are they the same?
You know, verdict is still out. For me, I'm a bit of a pessimist when it comes to artificial sweeteners. There's a lot of like controversial evidence, but for me, it's always questionable. Anything made by humans and advertised as food is always questionable. And so I have a hard stance. I don't do Splenda. I don't do aspartame. I don't do ACE-K. I don't do a lot of those fake sweeteners. Because I don't know, but there is enough evidence in animal studies that it's like, okay, well, if it does this here, why why is it messing me up? And then there's a pretty wealth of information in regards to gut health. And we have barely scratched the surface on gut health. So I think anything that could potentially mess with your gut is a no-no for me. And so, and then for others, we know that these sweeteners are sometimes 800 times the sweetness of regular sugar. And so you'll switch people off sugar, but then they'll switch to these artificial sweeteners. And now they're having these wild cravings because the sweetness level is so high and the dopamine reward system is so high that they're never satisfied. And so I think there's a lot of problems with artificial sweeteners. And when I talk about artificial, I'm not necessarily throwing stevia or monk fruit under the bus. I even think some of the sugar alcohols that are natural, like allulose, could potentially be okay. But I do try to steer clear of like the chemical, non-nutritive artificial sweeteners.
And not to mention the vegetable oils and the ultra-processed food that would really, the chemicals there would mess up our gut health, everything as well, and the hormones.
Oh, 100%. And I think, it's like sugar and seed oils. If people can get those two things out of their diet, their health will improve immensely, you know, and there's so much debate. I don't know how it is for you guys over there, but in the United States, people are so torn about seed oils. And it's another one of those things for me. One, we know that there's clear evidence about it causing insulin resistance. We know that there's clear evidence about, I wouldn't say as clear, but inflammatory processes. But even if you just look down from a common sense level of how it's made, what's added to it, it's bleached, it's refined. It's just like, why are we arguing about this? Y'all are really trying to convince me that this is food. And it's just like, people will go to their grave about this stuff of like, seed oils are fine. And it's like, okay, but I really don't want something that has to be bleached, processed, and can stay in the sun for months on end and not turn rancid in my body, you know? And it's so people just take this way out of proportion. And so like, get so like PubMed this and NIH this, just like, it's like, why are we making this so complicated? It wasn't food. And I go back to my stance about, we humans have just done a really poor job of creating food across the board. Everything we put our hands on and turn into food usually ends up being trash for our bodies. And so I take it pretty simple. And it's like, yeah, we can argue the science over it. I'm pretty convinced that the science shows of these problems. But it's just like from a common sense level, we tend to mess food up very bad. And so anything that we manipulate and make is a no for me as well.
Absolutely. Very common sense. That's what we need here. But something that's really scary is that these obesogens can mess with our genes and actually that our offspring is going to be affected by this. How does this work?
Yeah. So it comes down to mutations and SNPs and all these different things. And we're seeing this actively happen in, you know, children that are born with problems already. And you're starting to see it happen at younger ages and all of this. And it just comes down to DNA damage, right? And these things that we're exposing ourselves to. When they mess with your genes, then your children's chances of having some sort of change is higher. And so we're seeing this with unknown etiologies for a lot of the spectrum disorders like autism and ADHD and a lot of the mood disorders. We're seeing it in people with chronic obesity and diabetes, all the chronic diseases. We're also seeing it a lot with autoimmune diseases. You know, we're having all these mystery illnesses of like, oh, well, we don't, you know, most people can't tell you where autoimmune disease comes from or have no idea. And that's not a good enough answer for me. Like there's a reason my body is not acting as it should. Give me the answer for it. And I think that this is absolutely one of the answers is we're being exposed to these things that is damaging our cells. You know, here in the States, glyphosate is a thing. And the fact that we can still go into Home Depot or Lowe's and buy it is appalling, is shocking. You know, my neighbors, and I hate to throw them under the bus, but my kids were playing outside the other day and my neighbor comes out spraying Roundup in their front yard. And I'm sitting here and I pull my kids inside and I'm like, you know, but it's like people just have no protection. He's got it playing on his hands. And it's like, why is this available? You know, it's windy. Like my kids can breathe that. There's just all these problems that we just cannot solve at a root level that it's turning into exactly what you're saying. We're having children that are born with things that we can't figure out why. And I think to some degree, my biological daughter, she was born with this congenital problem and nobody could give me an answer. I'm sure it was some sort of exposure or, you know, whatever. You know, I grew up on a farm And my grandfather would let me help spray for weeds, you know, and I look back now and I'm like, cringe, this is terrible. But you know, you don't know what you don't know until we start getting the word out, and consumer money always drives demand, right? And so until we stop buying the stuff, and so we start demanding safer products, nothing will ever change. And so I put the responsibility on regulators and government officials, but it's also on us as consumers to just stop buying it. And I know it's painful because it can hit our wallet. But that was a very long-winded way of answering that question. But it's a mess.
It's a mess. But this has been doom and gloom. Let's talk about some solutions. What can we do to detox, and how can we help our body get these obesogens out?
Oh, great question. So number one is opening your detox pathways. So your liver needs to be functioning well. And that comes back down to like the fructose in your diet, and your gallbladder you need to be producing bile to get rid of this stuff. The first step in solutions is avoiding exposure, period. If you don't have to detox it, the better off you are. If it hasn't entered your body, the better off you are. So first thing is like open your eyes to things that could be happening, like my neighbor spraying glyphosate on his weeds while my kids are outside. That's like things like that. Or, you know, are you going to public places and not bringing a water bottle full of water and being forced to drink out of the tap? So start opening your eyes up to all of the daily exposures that you have, and start there with prevention by a long shot. Start switching out your products. And I'm not saying go wild and throw away everything and then spend $500 trying to replace everything. But as you run out of stuff, buy a new one that's clean. You can look on EWG.org. I like that website for clean beauty products. Like I mentioned, those apps, I'm sure they're available to you guys as well.
Yes, they are.
Great. And so start doing this stuff, and start with the things that you can change quickly. Start with the things that your children are being exposed to. Opening your detox pathways. So there's some herbs that can be helpful there. Any of your bitters can be helpful for your liver. Just changing your diet will help your liver detox. And then sweating. I really encourage people, you must sweat and you must poop. And it's not super pleasant, but if you're not sweating and you're not pooping, you're going to have buildup in your system. And so especially for my ladies that think it's normal to not poop every day, it's not. You need to go to the bathroom every single day. You ideally sweat every single day. And if you're not one to sweat easily, or it takes a lot of a workout, or like I'm in Phoenix where it's not super humid, so sometimes it's hard to break a sweat, get access to a sauna. Buy a sauna blanket. Go to a gym that has a sauna, or buy a sauna package. Do something where you can sweat, even just, you know, turning on a hot shower, whatever. Opening up your pores and getting rid of as much as possible. But those are the way that we excrete things is through breast milk, through urination, through pooping and sweating. Those are the four ways. And so you have to open those up if you want to see long-term detox. I'm a huge fan of the sauna. I try to get into a sauna, you know, 3-4 times a week for that particular reason.
We did a quite heavy detox,
sauna detoxification
for a week or so. And we had to take a lot of supplements afterwards, like chlorella binders to get them out. Do you use those too?
Totally. Yeah. Binders are great. Activated charcoal, anything like that. I also didn't mention fasting. In a lot of ways, fasting can be very helpful for detoxification, because you have to understand fat cells will store a lot of this. And so if you're overweight or have issues with obesity, the likelihood of you having these toxicants in your adipose cells or your fat cells is pretty high. And so I encourage people to take it slow. Sometimes people, when they start losing weight fast, they'll start feeling really, really bad. And sometimes that's the reason why, is because you're expelling these toxicants from your fat cells and it's reacting and you're having and so just understand that as well. So sometimes I don't recommend people if they have a lot of weight to lose to immediately start doing extremely long fast, solely because it will release a lot in the system, especially if you're breastfeeding and things like that. But yes, binders are great. Like you mentioned, chlorella, spirulina, things, you know, activated charcoal, anything like that can be helpful with those fasting protocols and sauna detox.
How about getting outside and earthing, walking barefoot, enjoying the sun? Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. I think that's one. I should have mentioned that. And when you were asking me about why we're having these problems, but yeah, we're so devoid of nature nowadays. Half of us work in a building with no windows. You know, it, sometimes people don't even get outside for 10 to 15 minutes. And that is wreaking havoc on our circadian rhythm is based on the sunlight. All of these things, we have just become so separated from nature. And that is not our biological meaning. We need that. We need the sun. We need, you know, we need stillness. You know, nowadays with the smartphones, we can't even go 10, 15 minutes without getting sucked into this dopamine high with our smartphones. And it's just, I mean, we could go on for it. I love the book Dopamine Nation. If you guys haven't read, it's fantastic. And so all of these things add up to health long-term. And I think just being willing to unplug from a lot of that and prioritizing what we come from and the sunlight and sleep and stress, all of that is just plays a huge role in long-term health.
This has been amazing. You're actually going to speak at the Hack Your Health. We wish we could come, but we are joining online, so at least we can see you. But where can people reach you?
Yes, thank you guys for having me. This has been such a pleasure. Everybody can reach me at The Ketogenic Nutritionist on all platforms. I'm on TikTok. I have a podcast, not nearly as good as y'all's. I just have a few out. So y'all find me there. And of course, Instagram is my main platform. And I try to answer as many questions in my DMs. So if anybody has questions or ideas or thoughts or anything like that, y'all please reach out. Again, it's been an honor to spend some time with you guys this morning.
Thank you very much, Tempo.
Thank you so much.
yeah, you bet.
Really, really great. But do you still take clients?
Oh, yeah. I take clients all the time. Yeah. Okay, so I have a little bit of a cap just because I'm in med school at the time. But yeah, I still take tons of clients. I have like 100 on my roster right now. Oh, so it's good. Yeah, it's good stuff. I love it.
So that we know we can reach out from Norway too.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Thank
enjoy you. The rest of your day. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.
Vi bryter av litt for å takke vår sponsor på episodene I mai, Skinome. Deres hudpleieserie inneholder naturlige ingredienser som oppleves som mat og ren næring for huden.
Kanskje har du hørt om bakterien Lactobacillus reuteri, som opprinnelig kommer fra brystmelk. Dette noe vi kan nå få I hudpleieserien fra Skinome.
Fantastiske helsegivende effekter på huden siden disse bakteriestammene virker antiinflammatoriske.
Vi biohackere elsker å jobbe med å dempe både betennelse og også redusere irritasjon.
Og vi liker at kroppen vår gjenkjenner det vi daglig smører oss med, at vi spiller på lag slik som naturen spiller på lag med oss og med helsen vår.
Ved bruk av produkter med denne bakterien vil du få din gode dose med levende bakterier som ikke bare føles bra, men som fukter, det reduserer rødhet og styrker hudbarrieren, og så liker jeg veldig godt lukten. Det kjennes så sunt ut.
Og etter bare 3 ukers bruk så viser kliniske studier mer fukt, bedre hudtekstur, utjevning av fine linjer og rynker og mindre porer.
Så, det gode grunner til å inkludere Skinome I din biohacking-hverdag med et sunt hudmikrobiom, mer glød, bedre elastitet og motstand mot miljøgifter.
Så benytt dere gjerne vårt tilbud. Gå inn på skinome.com og bruk rabattkoden BIOHACKINGGIRLS20 med store bokstaver.
For en dame, Alette, hun bare, altså, for det første så kan du trykke på en knapp, og så kommer all kunnskapen rennende ut. Hun har så mye erfaring, og mye å dele, og mye engasjement, og nei, virkelig en fantastisk inspirator. Men det visste vi jo fra sosiale medier, og vi har jo hørt henne flere steder.
Ja, hun var, det jeg kanskje likte best, var hvor reflektert hun var, og hvor liksom, hun var ikke noe dogmatisk på noe. Hun var bare helt klar på at hun ville hjelpe. Hun har selvfølgelig sine strategier, og det hun hadde gjort som har hjulpet henne, men hun ser også at vi alle forskjellige, og har forskjellige veier til målet. Og det virker som hun bruker alle hjelpemidler hun kan I å hjelpe pasienter. Nei, men var helt nydelig, og som du sa, det var bare å skru på, og hun pratet.
Ja, ikke sant? Men det litt deilig også, for det når du har så mye kunnskap, så trenger ikke vi å sitte og avbryte hele tiden. Hun kan få lov til å snakke ut, og hun kom med mange sånne, ja, fine råd som lette å ta fatt på, fordi du kan på en måte sørge for å eliminere litt, og drikke rent vann, og passe på kjemikalier hjemme. Det noen sånne startpunkter, og dette med kosthold jo også enormt viktig, og vi ser jo at hun har vært på en keto-reise veldig lenge, men den har hun moderert, så den ligner litt mer på en middelhavsdiet I dag, altså en ketogen middelhavsdiet for å si det sånn, for det jo absolutt bare de gode karbohydratene I form av stivelsesrike grønnsaker og grønne grønnsaker og en del frukt hun spiser. Så hun favoriserer jo den livsstilen fremdeles, men det virker som det et større slingringsmann.
Og så likte jeg veldig godt den, når hun snakket hvordan hun spiste rundt syklusen sin, og hvordan hun la inn karbohydrater I forhold til trening. Snakk om å være intuitiv. Fy søren, det var veldig spennende å høre.
Ja, og så litt gøy at hun litt strengere da, kanskje I noen dager og ukedagene, og det jo sånn den døgnrytmen vår også at vi jo ikke like 7 dager I uken. Vi spiser litt annerledes på mandagen enn det vi gjør på lørdag kveld, for da vil du være sammen med familien din. Og, men jeg tenker også at variasjonen som hun snakker om viktig. Og når det gjelder PCOS, så det jo et stort spekter av hvordan man føler seg innenfor det syndromfeltet også. Alle jo ikke like. Og jeg likte også godt når hun trekker frem dette med kortisol, for det at hvis du har for høyt stressnivå, så skal du kanskje behandle dette syndromet litt annerledes, ikke så mye faster, ikke så mye ekstreme ting. Så hun må til hver og en pasient da, tilrettelegge og ja, se at vi biologisk forskjellige.
Jeg glad man kan fortsatt ha veiledning på online, så at selv om hun sitter I Phoenix, Arizona, så går det an å få hjelp av henne, for hun virker som en sånn, Gud, det var deilig å høre på henne snakke.
Jeg tror kanskje hvis jeg hadde hatt det syndromet selv, at jeg hadde dristet meg til å ha tatt en online coaching med henne. Jeg synes hun så troverdig. Men det hjelper jo på at hun nå blir en medisinsk lege I tillegg. Da. For det noe med den titlen du får og det ansvaret du bærer som lege I tillegg til å være en biohacker. Så hun jo superpopulær overalt I verden og fyker rundt og holder for og vi vet at hun har lyst til å komme til Norge, for det noe hun ser på, noen hun nysgjerrig på som vi har I Norge, så det ikke har I USA, men det får bli en annen historie. Men la oss snakke litt om de tiltakene hun tipste oss om da, Alette.
Ja, I forhold til disse obesogenene, hvis dere også blir litt nervøse, så har vi faktisk ganske mye makt og mye vi kan gjøre. Og det første hun snakket om, som kanskje det enkleste å starte med, jo maten for ryddet opp. Spis ren, hel mat, det var det første hun snakket om, gjerne sånn økologisk selvfølgelig, og gressfôret. Nå jo vi ganske sikkert litt heldigere I Norge I forhold til kjemikalier enn det de I USA sånn generelt. Men sånn, ja, og her får man jo kjøpt mye som lokalt og sånne ting, så det ikke så vanskelig for oss å begynne der.
Og I den forbindelse så det også lurt da å vaske grønnsakene, for man vet det aldri, sant? Så mange ganger skal man være sånn sløve og bare kaste dem opp I salaten, eller tenke at alt tilberedt fra butikken inn I disse plastposene. Men vaske grønnsakene, for man vet ikke om det noen sprøytemidler på dem. Så det med ren mat, og det tilbake igjen til hvordan vi naturlige vesener, at vi kan faktisk reverserer så mange symptomer bare med maten vi spiser. Og innenfor det matspekter da, så var det jo spesielt dette med fruktose, sukker, vegetabilske oljer, ultraprosessert mat, holde seg unna de dårlige carbsene da, karbohydratene, og alkohol mener hun da at ingen bør drikke, og dette med kaffe, at hun har gått over til sånne stoppkaffer da, mushroom coffees, som vi også veldig glad I. Så det var også fint. Men videre så, en ting som vi vet bra, det svette. Og I dag har det vært så fint vær og varmt på Core Balance, og folk kom inn, og det var liksom, vi kom til å svette skikkelig på megaformen I dag. Så jeg sa, ja, men det så bra. Da har jeg akkurat snakket med Temple, og vi bare fulle av inspirasjon til å svette enda mer. Så det gikk ut dryppvåte fra studio nå I dag, og jeg tenker at det også bra. Vi må svette mye.
Vi sier ja til litt svetting hver dag, og når vi snakker om svette, så det jo også dette vannet vi drikker. Det går an, og selv om vi bor I Norge, sjekke vannkvaliteten, og det noe man kan gjøre med det også, enkelt og greit med å filtrere vannet.
Og når det gjelder svette, så kan man jo også bruke sauna, og vi hadde jo et par episoder, en på norsk og en på engelsk, med Daniel Root, som snakker om detox I saunaen da. Og det har vi testet også, så det jo muligheter, fordi at disse kjemikaliene, de fester seg jo på fettorganene våre. Så ved å detoxe i sånn da med en del supplementer, kosttilskudd, så kan man da få de trukket ut av kroppen, men det krever sin protokoll.
133 den engelske, og så det 134 som den norske.
Ikke sant? Så da kan dere gå tilbake og lytte til de hvis dere ville ta opp den sonarprotokollen igjen og så prøve litt på det for å kvitte oss med tungmetaller, kjemikalier og alt som kommer fra ja, make-up og sånn. Så det jo et annet tema hun tok opp med sminke og sånne ting.
Rydde opp i sminken din, og hun var ikke sånn kast alt du har og kjøpt ny. Hun var sånn, bruk opp det du har, men når du skal bytte ut, så finn et merke som bedre. Og det jo det vi har holdt på med hele tiden, byttet ut ting. Ikke sant? Og vi snakket om det, hva har du på kjøkkenet? Har du brukt plast hele tiden? Så ta og bytte ut og når ting ødelagt. Og det har vi jo snakket masse om, og med sånne plastfjeler og sånn, alt sånt, få byttet ut.
Og disse evighetskjemikaliene som man finner da i en bare en enkel takeaway kaffekopp som du får på kaffestedene rundt omkring, den varmen fra kaffen trekker til seg da de kjemikaliene som vi da drikker og får inn i kroppen, og de er der forever.
Ja, og så likte jeg så godt når hun bare, når du snakket om jording og skog, og hun ble bare helt sånn euforisk. Ja, jeg er så glad for at du sier det. Vi må jo være ute, og det slår vi slag for. Kom dere ut og
nå har vi hatt episode med Caroline Heierdal og snakket masse om vasking også, og det var jo også et felt vi var inne om. Ikke bare det at du skal bytte ut produktene dine, men rydde opp i hjemmet ditt, få bort støv og få bort ja, produkter som du ikke trenger, bruke det opp, eller i alle fall de med sånne store warning-skilt på, de kan man kanskje ta ut. Og så er det så mange gode tips på hvordan man klarer å fjerne flekker uten å bruke kjemikalien likevel.
Tenk det. Ja, så vi håper dere har fått litt, kanskje ikke akkurat inspirasjon, men at dere har fått litt erfaringer og fått litt påfyll av ting vi kan gjøre selv, og ikke bare bli kjemperedde. Dette greier vi dere. Dette kommer til å gå helt fint.
Så gå inn og sjekk ut Temple Stewart sin Insta der. Den er altså så morsom og full av herlige reels. Da ønsker vi dere en nydelig uke, og vi høres igjen snart.
Track it.
Hack it. Vi minner om at dere må snakke med egen lege eller kostholdsveileder om dietter og andre spørsmål relatert til medisiner og supplementer. Informasjonen vi deler kan ikke bli brukt til å diagnostisere, behandle, forebygge eller kurere noen sykdommer eller tilstander.